now that we're in this triple digit thing, I don't know. It's weird. I almost want to start over. I long for the days of the 097 or the 032. I don't know.
I love that you think that it's weird now, right? Oh, I have three digits, but I felt really weird for the first, 100 or so with those extras thrown in every time I had to post on Mastodon or Twitter back in the day with like zero something. And I just knew people looking at it thinking, are they all right? Like, they know that zero represents nothing. They don't have to do that. So I'm glad that you feel weird now. It's your turn.
Well, now the problem really is that no one thought we would get to three digits. So now the problem of four digits is going to be like Y2K for this show. Because if we hit 1,000, I'm pretty sure the whole show will explode, just like everything did on Y2K.
So you're saying we should have been doing two zeros at the front?
I think so.
Before we reached 100 to account for that.
That would have been, you know, hindsight and all, but that would have been the correct move, I think.
Oh, well, we're screwed.
Here we are. Yeah. We're going to have to hire a whole team of programmers to go in and change the date codes and so forth from, you know, 108 to 0108. It's going to be a whole thing, but I think we know people, so it should be okay.
We get Ron Livingston on it and Samir.
Yeah, I think they're available, so it should be fine.
Nain in a jar.
And maybe they could hook us up with that penny scam, too. And then that solves all the funding issues. So it's kind of like a, you know, double dip.
Like in Superman?
Superman 2, yeah.
Let's try it. But you'll have to look up money laundering in the dictionary.
Sorry, I know a guy that has a dictionary, and his name is Martin Feld.
And a thesaurus.
Yeah, I see one over there on the bookshelf.
I bet he's one of the only people that probably has tried to correct his dictionary with a red pen. That just seems like the kind of guy Martin is.
I don't apply pens to printed books, so I'm sorry to disappoint you there.
Did you hear how I just... Oh, wow. I felt that. That was...
Have you got a foot imprint on your head right now?
I could feel it on my neck. I thought I was like having trouble. Like, oh, wow. That was...
You just ate dirt, my friend.
I did. He swept the legs and then just pressed...
It brings back to mind, do you remember that clip art you did a long time ago where we had Feld and then the rest of us?
That's what started it.
Being crushed. I think it's time for that artwork to come back again.
That's what started it. That's what started the whole foot thing.
That was? Really?
Pretty sure it was early on.
Oh. Yeah, we should bring that back. I think it's so long ago, it's probably like 320 by 240 or something.
It's in my favorites album, in my photos app. I look at it occasionally and just go, yeah, that's pretty funny.
It's in my favorites. Oh, that's great.
Comes up as a memory on his iPad screen. He's just like, yep.
Exactly.
That's right.
On this day. But it's just every day.
The day that the insulting began. Yep.
I'll bring it into Pixelmator and do the super ultra mega enhance thing. And blow it up for you.
That would be good.
That's just what I wanted.
So you don't...
So was that a segue to our third topic?
I think so.
Because I put this in the notes a little while ago, and it's come up for episode 108. So, yeah, I mean, this doesn't have to go for too long because, you know, correcting gets painful. But,
well,
Jason, you took this photo of a red Sharpie, I think, that you had written my name on.
Yep.
Basically symbolizing my character or personality. Martin, you are the red pen. Yep, you're holding it right now. Yep. There you go. And you can check the show notes, everyone, for this. It's the Martin Sharpie. Mm-hmm. And it made me think, am I the only one who's correcting things in this way? Surely people are editing or critiquing their own work. I mean, what about you two? Do you edit things heavily? And if so, where did that kind of spirit or habit come from?
I want to say in regard to the pen, I don't actually remember why this came about. I don't recall the context. I just found this again. It resurfaced in my house recently. And I was like, oh, red Sharpie. And I picked it up and scrawled on the side in black Sharpie is Martin on. I was like, oh, this is the Martin Sharpie. Of course. I couldn't recall why I had it, but I bet it was hilarious when it happened. If anybody knows what episode it is, let me know, because I have no idea.
I don't know if it ever came up in an episode, but look, before you answer the question, I'd like to think that within the Feld family, who are known as being a little bit, let's say, mildly obsessed with spelling, grammar, punctuation, all that stuff.
Mildly.
I kind of got that from my dad. Mildly, okay, to varying degrees, all right? So from my dad's side, this is where this comes from, and my mum was particularly good with reading and stuff when I was a kid. I remember we would read together. We're talking like primary school age stuff, so literacy was really encouraged from her side as well. But in the Feld family, it's really a matter of if you were writing an essay for university or something for high school or whatever, you'd print it out, and my dad would do this, and he would sit down with me after I'd written a draft, and the red pen would come out. And it would be a matter of highlighting printed on the page to let things jump out at you rather than relying on the screen where it could be kind of lost or ambiguous, right? Actually crossing out and writing things. Jason's adjusting stuff in the notes. What's going on here? Are you correcting now?
No. I'm just keeping track of things.
Yeah. But I suppose I learned this art or habit or whatever of correcting things. And now working in communications generally, I kind of approach a lot of work like that. And I think that the red Sharpie came out for you with my name on it because I was applying a similar kind of rigor or habit to things that we were writing or things in the show notes. And look, your show notes are wonderful, but if I spot a missing hyphen, I'm going to put it in there.
I hate you and your hyphens. I really do. Stylistically, they look disgusting and they're gross.
You talking about M dashes or hyphens?
Hyphens.
They're different.
He hyphens everything and I think it looks terrible.
I don't hyphenate everything. I hyphenate compound modifiers, and that's where they're useful.
He's the hyphenator.
Yeah. I'll take that term. That's better than foot.
No, you will remain foot. F-O hyphen O-T.
All right. Anyway, back to the question. Do either of you have this kind of habit with anything that you write or maybe something else that you do in your work, and where did it come from? Because I can't be the only one who likes to correct something.
I find if I print something out and then get a pen, I will discover so many more errors and items needing correction than I would if I just proof something on the screen as a document, if I'm reading it.
Right.
Usually it's something that I myself have written and I want to proof my own work. I find that if I print it, get a pen, I'm not too fussy about the color. Sometimes I don't like using red because I feel like I'm being too hard on myself. You know, so I will go a blue usually because usually it's printed in black and a blue provides a contrast point, but I don't feel like I'm being punished by my own self. It's more like a suggestive edit. Hey, Andrew, have you thought about doing this? And I'll scribble. And when I'm finished, usually I'll look at it and I'll go, wow, I made so many mistakes in that original draft. But when I'd read it on the page, it seemed fine. So I am really strongly in favor of pen editing. And I don't know if that's an age thing as well. I didn't grow up in a pure digital era. I grew up in a handwritten era, learning how to do proper cursive at school. So maybe that's an age thing.
Well, it's funny you say that because I learned cursive or running writing at school. And even though I just said that my dad did this with the red pen, I don't print anything or ever use a red pen. I do everything on the screen.
You should try printing. You should try. I would like to see. This is an experiment for you now, Martin. Next time you write something, write it. Then
I don't have a printer.
I was going to say, I bet he doesn't even have a printer.
I hate them.
Okay.
I knew it.
You need to get the Hemispheric Views authorized printer, endorsed printer. It's the Brother HL3120? Is that
3120, Jason? And then there's like some letters at the end, I think. Like CW something.
That's the one the old men in the chat. I can't believe he doesn't have a printer. Not even an inkjet?
I grew up with one, but they're shit. They're rickety, they break, the ink is just way too expensive, and then you get jammed.
You get a printer at work. Surely you've got a big...
I have only ever printed something at work once, and it was because I was asked to. And when they asked me to, I said, I don't have printer access. And they said, is there a problem? And I said, no, I just don't need it.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
So if I'm just to give out the model number here, it's the Brother HL-3290-CDW.
CDW, yeah.
There's even a hyphen in there, so Martin will love that printer.
I'm encouraged by its presence.
It was the HLL, but then somebody like Martin came along in marketing and was like, no, it's HL-L. And they're like, fine.
Was it a dash or a hyphen?
Oh, Christ.
Do you use a red pen, Jason?
I've actually changed my tune. I used to be a editor to a fault, to where I would get almost nothing out on the page because I was constantly fussing with like every single sentence to make sure it was perfect. And I've now switched my tune, for better or worse, to just like get shit on the page and then deal with it later. Just get stuff on there.
That's good.
Get it out, write it. It could be utter crap, doesn't make any sense, riddled with typos, but get it out there. And that's what I do now. And I think it's sometimes to a fault, because if I look at like a blog post, I will hit publish and then immediately find 900 things that I need to fix. The best autocorrect, or the best like spelling correction, is not the squiggly line. It's pressing publish on a blog post.
So that will
immediately give you all of these, like, use Vision OS all you want. I don't need it. I just have my eyes and I just see millions of red squiggles after I push publish. But yeah, I do that. And then I even do it like from a work thing, though. Like, I'll put something into like a Slack message just to get it out and then go, and immediately hit up arrow and correct like 50 things. And then it's basically every message I send is edited, which maybe that's good, maybe that's bad. But in the long run, I feel like it's better to just get the thoughts out and then correct them later. So that's where I'm at now. I'm a very big corrector / editor nowadays, because I'll get, at the end of the day, I think a better result, or at least a better representation of my thoughts, because more of the thoughts hit the page than were spent cycles trying to correct like the first intro sentence forever.
Cool. All right.
I like printed document. I feel it feels more official. I like it.
Once it's on paper, I lose it.
Oh, look, I don't keep paper. I just like printing it, looking at it, and then throwing it away.
Oh, that's good. Sounds good. Environmental impact.
Responsible.
Like, wow, that presents really nicely on the page.
Yeah. Have we done an environmental impact report for this organization recently? Have we
done our 2024? I fear it now, hearing Andrew's behavior.
I'm not sure we did one in 2023, but I think I might approach the board to request a environmental impact report for this podcast.
So I'm just going to throw this out there. Despite being the quote-unquote foot, I may have the smallest footprint.
Ooh. What size shoe do you wear?
Generally, it's around a 9 to 10, 9.5. Yeah, whatever we use in Australia, is it equivalent to US?
Yes.
I have no idea. I don't think we've talked about shoe sizes.
That's our preferred.
Okay. Well, I'm a 9, 9.5 generally. Occasionally a 10 if it's a weird shoe.
Okay.
Okay. And then I'm 11.5, and I think Andrew's probably like a 28 or something.
I'm a 14 US.
Okay. Hmm.
So technically you do have the smallest footprint.
Wide. 14 E.
E.
Got to get the wide foot.
What is E?
Yeah, this is the width.
E is width?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know why it's E, but it is.
So this nickname of mine is looking more and more inappropriate all the time.
It is, yeah.
Look, hang on.
Can we get a photo of that?
All right. I don't.
Everyone smile. You got one it? Second. Three,
I don't
two.
Want my face next to that.
Too bad it already is. Check the show notes for Andrew's foot.
Damn it. Oh, my hip. Oh.
Oh, man.
Jeez. They call him the foot.
We had a discussion, I wouldn't say recently. Recently feels like too soon, but it was a while back now where I think it was kind of, the theme was IT kind of horror stories, or like data that you deleted on accident or on purpose at work. Things related to data being just gone in a very bad way in a working environment where the data technically wasn't yours. So you're kind of on the hook now. And Binary Digit did us a solid and didn't just put a text thread in there. There was a lovely audio clip of the story, and we wanted to share that so that everyone could have a word of caution when it comes to data in the workplace.
Hey, it's Binary Digit. I was going to record my really quick story on the crazy situation that happened in my old job, where Johnny Decimal said, posted or it didn't happen. So here goes. I used to be a systems engineer for an IT company. It was a managed services provider in New York. And we had many clients. One of my jobs was to check the backups of many of the clients. One in particular, I checked almost every day. But of course, we had about five engineers on the team managing all these customers. And this was near the very end of this job where I was there for about 6 or 7 years. I was already hitting burnout. It was really, really scary, actually, how crazy burnout can be. So anyway, this was one of the very last memories that I had with my boss before he left. He was the director of the managed services department. Really cool guy. We both worked as a team and he was amazing. And so, and he had kind of no fear because he was ex-military. He was ex-Marine. Anyway, so, and I was associate systems engineer technically. So I was doing all this work when really it should have been more, someone more senior. But anyway, story is I had to check backups for one of the customers. There was many servers. One in particular was their file server. Of course, this was the day days before everything was in the cloud and we had just local servers on site and we had to check tape backups or digital backups, whatever systems they had. So I thought everything was good. We got a call in saying, hey, we have an emergency at this customer. For some reason, we feel like they got some ransomware. And I was like, oh God, ransomware. I've dealt with this before. But no, I didn't. I thought I did, but this was on another level. So I logged into the servers. Sure enough, I checked the backups to see if they were running. And every single server was in the backup system except their file server, which was the most important one. For some reason, it didn't run for a few days. And of course, that's the one that got hit the worst. So panic, mini panic, told my boss. My boss is like, oh shit, are you serious? And I said, yes. And so I had to look into all of our options. It was very nerve-wracking, but anyway, luckily, me being a nerd, I knew how to log into the, as they say, dark web, which really, it could be dark web, but not really. I logged into Tor. I went onto the Onion site. It's like a .onion web address that the ransomware says, you know, you have to pay this ransom in Bitcoin or whatever. And back then, Bitcoin was whatever rate it was obviously very different. I would say this was probably in 2015 when this happened. So, or 2016. So I logged in and I was like, oh my God, okay. So here is how much the ransom was. I think it was for the company, it was like $1,000, which was nothing. But the point is of course, it's very embarrassing for an IT company to not check backups and fix this system when it could have been resolved with restoring some backups. So what we had to do, I had to use a different network at work, which wasn't under our firewall, which is kind of like an outside wireless connection, download the Tor browser, log into the site, see the ransom message. And I asked my boss, like, hey, what do you want to do? He's like, all right, looks like we're going to have to pay this ransom. And I was like, wow, okay, this is going to be experience. So I said, he's like, how do I get the Bitcoin? I said, well, and remember, we're in New York, in Long Island. I said, well, there's an ATM in Brooklyn, which was like the closest one that was kind of obtainable because he had a car. I said, there's an ATM in Brooklyn that you could literally get a wallet, put money into the ATM with cash and get some Bitcoin in your Bitcoin wallet. And he's like, okay, so I'll do it. I'll do it. Let's go. Let's do it. I'll do it. So I stayed in the office, of course. He went out to Brooklyn to go to the ATM and literally put money with a check from the company. He cashed it, he put the cash in the ATM and did the whole thing. And of course, he was nervous trying to get the Bitcoin wallet. That was a separate day. I helped him with his ID and all this other stuff. And I saw him visibly nervous, which I was like shocked because he's not a nervous guy. He's just like, you know, whatever. So, but yeah, I remember the day he went, he said, okay, I'm here. You should see the line of people doing this same thing. And people were telling him stories. And he told me the stories of how people were putting money into this ATM to get Bitcoin to pay the ransom because they had tons of pictures of family members that were precious to them and they had to go pay the ransom. And it was insane. So that happened. Luckily, I went online. I paid it with the Bitcoin wallet that he provided me. We got the extraction key and we decrypted all the files and miraculously it worked. It was legit. So that was a crazy experience and I'll never forget it. And now I have 3-2-1 backups all the time. And I hope everyone else does too. Thanks for listening.
I like when people submit clips. I'll just say that right now. If you want to submit audio of any kind, well, mostly any kind, I will say. But it can be almost about anything. We just like hearing from people in their own lives, their own worlds, and what's going on with them. So if you have like a fun story or something, even better, something related to something we talked about, like we talked about hamburgers for like 50 minutes last time, got a good hamburger story, or you want to tell us why HJs are better than BKs, let us know. Record that audio, submit it to Discord, email, whatever, and it may, pending, you know, legal review, make it on the show. Right there. Do you see that?
What is it?
That is the Zyke. Zyke? 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 We don't know. Who knows? Smart card made by
Zyke.
Zyke Tech LLC. So a name you can trust. Everyone knows
Zickelk.
Zickeltech LLC. Everyone knows them. Yeah. So what it is a, okay, you know AirTags, right? You know your friend AirTag.
Oh, with everyone's favorite button batteries. Yep.
Yeah. A little dollop of AirTag will do you. They're great. They go on your stuff, help you find it if you lose it. However, there's a few places where an AirTag just doesn't really fit, you know? One of those being, oh, I don't know, a wallet.
Oh, it fits.
Can't put an AirTag in there unless you want your wallet to be 4 meters thick.
I do it.
Ugh.
Do you have a purse?
No, just stick it in the money bit of the wallet.
I've just solved your problem with the ZK smart card. Locate with Apple Find My. It is a credit card sized device that supports Find My, and you shove it in your wallet because it's the size of a credit card. And then you have Find My in your wallet. And the extra cool thing, AirTags, AirTag dies. What do you do? How do you get an AirTag going again? Anybody?
Get it going again?
Yeah. Let's say it dies. How do you get your AirTag working again?
Change the battery.
When you twist it open, you take the button battery out, you put the new one in, and if you have to reset it, there's like a 5-press beepy
thing. Exactly.
That's it.
Taking out a battery and you're throwing it in the ocean and you're ruining the environment. That's exactly what's going on.
That's what Andrew would do.
Yeah, I print the instructions.
Well, he puts it into the printer paper and then just lights it all on fire. I'm pretty sure that's how that goes. Yeah. But these little doodads, you just attach to a MagSafe charger and it charges the card.
That's cool.
And you only have to charge it like once every, it says once a year, but like even if it's once every 6 months, big whoop.
Oh, MagSafe. Okay. Yeah. Not the Apple Watch. Sorry. I was thinking the Apple Watch thing.
Yeah. Like, the little, you know, the little puck thing. You just stick it on there. It magnets to it. It has a little light. It charges, turns green when it's done. And
that's cool.
That's it. And it works with Find My. Yeah. It's really pretty sweet little deal. IPX7 water resistant. So
is there a hyphen in there or a dash?
Oh, no. No, there isn't.
I didn't think there was. I just wanted to waste your time.
Built-in battery charges for a half an hour, can last about 1 year. So there you go.
Is it an Apple Store purchase?
It's oh no, these are not, I don't believe these are sanctioned in any conceivable way.
Okay.
But they work and they show up in Find My, so good enough for me.
Do they show up in the Chinese government as well?
I mean, what doesn't?
So are you gonna turn up on the front page of, I don't know, what, the Oregon Observer with man's pocket explodes with unsanctioned wallet explosive or something?
I'll take the risk. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Best of luck.
And if you look on the front, it has helpful pictures for things you can attach the card to.
Oh.
Some of which include a wallet. Also, the card is comically missized to what the thing is it's on. So the wallet is about the size of a house compared to the card. So that's helpful. A backpack, a suitcase, your medical doctor bag. So if you're a doctor and you're carrying your doctor bag around, you go, oh shit, where's my doctor tools? Psh, no problem. Found it. Find My. Your car, your bike, your baby stroller thing.
Oh, it's terrible when you lose your baby like that.
I know, but now you can find them. So it's not an issue anymore. Keys, your badge, your computer, or your trophy.
Trophy.
So if you're constantly misplacing your trophy, got you covered.
Yeah. You hate it when you lose your trophy, jeez.
You don't want to be having people over for a big dinner party And, you know, you have your friend like subtly drop the hint about the trophy to try to bring it up naturally. And then you go, oh, this old thing, and it's not on the shelf. You go, oh, shit, where is my trophy? Hold on. You pull out your phone and you go, boop, 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 boop. Oh, there it is in the laundry basket again.
You know the Stanley Cup in the ice hockey league?
I've heard of it.
Traditionally, the victors get to take that on a tour. So it all goes back to the players, their homes. You know, they take it back to where they started from. It's kind of a tradition. But it turns out that the Stanley Cup was also being taken to some inappropriate locations.
Mm.
And so it required the league to step in and say, hey, you can't do that with the Stanley Cup. Certain places, certain things that you shouldn't be doing with the cup.
If it fits, it sits. This is actually the official sponsor of the NHL, if you didn't know that already. So they sponsored the NHL, and they sponsor us. So there you go. Do I have to still disclaim that like we don't actually, nobody believes that we actually have sponsors, right?
I still do. Someone coming in might think that we're a serious business
outfit.
They might
think it's, we actually, no, we, nothing is sponsored here, right?
And all the business chat that Andrew brings to this podcast, they're thinking, this is hard-hitting business journalism.
Hard-hitting,
like, who knows what sort of deals that, you know, they're doing.
We're subscriber only. We're the cutting edge of podcasting.
Is this the Harvard industry. Business Review podcast? That's what most people say when they
Harvard
join.
Harvard Business wishes it was
Can you imagine if they had this kind of content? Probably sell a copy or two.
They're like keeping notes, like how do you spell depreciation?
Do you know where I keep such notes, Martin?
Grains of rice in his kitchen? This is unheard of.
I keep all my depreciation notes in my note-taking app of choice.
It's like a podcast player of choice, but for notes.
For notes. I've tried them all. You would probably never guess that.
No.
I've got a new favorite.
Every time I see in the app store where they have like a top notes list, I just assume it's like your editorial.
When I look at those, it just says like download, you know, it's
all the little clouds with the down arrow,
open or download cloud. Yeah
Look, I'm not surprised by this, and when I like in general that you would switch note taking apps, Andrew, but when I saw which one it was, I just had a big, you're kidding, in my mind. And how many people have you insulted on this podcast for using this app? Like, are you okay?
Isn't that kind of the theme of the show, though? I mean,
look, it's...
Anyway, go on.
I used this app many years ago in its first incarnation. I even subscribed to it for a year way back when and used it for a year. And then thought, why am I bothering with this? I don't really need it. And I went away from it, and then it didn't ever develop further. And then Bear 2 emerged, and everybody raved about Bear 2. And I said, great, I liked Bear 1, but it didn't really do much, and Bear 2 doesn't seem that much different. So I ignored it, and I belittled those who chose to accept it. Until my voyages through Logseq and Obsidian and Agenda and DevonThink and Apple Notes and Tot and Drafts meandered my way through until I was looking at Bear 2 the other day. And I thought, maybe, just maybe, there's something to this app. Maybe I should give it a try. And I downloaded it, and it was gorgeous, and it was fast, and it was the sync was reliable, and it worked on all my machines, and it didn't look like a DOS app from 1987. And I thought, there could be something to this. I might be willing to put some cold, hard cash behind this. And I clicked the subscribe button. And at that point, I knew this app was for me because it remembered my loyalty from Bear 1. It remembered that I was a buyer of Bear 1. I think that's why I did what it did. But it gave me a discounted subscription price.
/ save.
And I was like, how could I not? This app knows me. It just responded to my fiscal care. And I was like, I'm buying it. And I bought it. And I have it everywhere. And I love it. And it's in my dock. And it's beautiful.
Please.
It's beautiful.
The journey is over, my friends.
For this week.
Bear is it. No more faffing around.
Yeah, right.
I know where everything is. Everything's in bare. Everything looks nice. Everything syncs across except to my work PC, but that's okay. I'm sure there's some web app coming in the future. Bear, I forgot to mention I used Strata for a while, speaking of web app, web note-taking apps.
Don't know that one.
It's a microblog.
Micro.blogs.
Yep.
Thing, yeah.
Oh, right.
And FastMail Notes. That's another one. But Bear is where it's at. Everybody, jump on it.
Look, I feel before we go on, you know, obviously, I'm not going to go into the fact that you say it's the final note-taking app ever because... I've never believed a statement less than that, but moving on, I think you owe all of the listeners you've insulted some form of at least a minor apology.
Sorry. That was a very minor apology.
Listeners, you know where to find us. Our complaints department is titled NBL Pocket Podcast. If you have any issues with the apology that was just given, please let them know.
It's hello@nblpocketpodcast.com.
But look, Andrew, I'm happy for you. I'm happy for the next 7 to 8 weeks of your note-taking bliss before you find out that it can't do something and you move somewhere else.
Seven? You're giving it 7 to 8 weeks.
I paid for a year subscription.
That's a long time.
I locked myself in.
No, no, 7 to 8 weeks, given that he's just told us, you know, that he's got his annual subscription, of him genuinely liking it and using it, and then... you know, slowly but steadily it'll be, the web app isn't there or there's something wrong with the Windows PC support. But then he'll continue limping along with this sort of gangrenous vestigial subscription that he'll want to keep a hold of, but kind of be looking with like yearning and just longing at some other alternative. And then he'll move to that and use it concurrently. You know, he'll be doing both, and then he'll splinter everything and it'll get fragmented, but then he'll find some way to justify it because the money's there. You know, it's just ridiculous. Yeah. So it'll be something like that.
He's big on sunk cost.
You guys really know me. I feel so seen. Oh boy.
If you need some bear tips, I'm happy to give them to you over time. Oh. If that would be helpful.
I don't know if I need them. It's so straightforward. It's just such a beautiful app.
We'll call them bear hacks.
In Australia in the 80s, maybe? 90s? Long time ago, when TV ads were still really a big thing and they were sort of part of the zeitgeist.
Is that BMF?
Huh?
Before Martin Feld?
Well, this is where I'm going. You don't preempt me.
Oh, okay.
Because, we had these TVs and we'd have TV commercials selling products. And there was a period where there was a couple of guys that became... larger than life in the TV ad sales world. And they became just personas in their own right. And they would start doing guest appearances on other shows. And they would do crossovers with other products. They just were so massively popular and known. I'll give you two examples. But where I'm going with this is, was there such a similar thing in the US? Or was this kind of a distinctly Australian thing? I assume not. I assume it was all ripped off from somewhere else. But the two that spring to mind immediately in Australia were Big Kev. Big Kev was a big Queensland guy, I think. And he sold cleaning products. And he would drape himself in a shiny satin shirt of the Australian flag. Yeah, because that was one of the big selling products. It was all local, it was Australian. And he would talk about these cleaning products really enthusiastically. And then he would finish off with, "I'm excited." and everybody, like, I remember walking around and it became a catch cry across the entire nation. You'd just say, "I'm excited." When something great happened, Big Kev became part of the zeitgeist. Then there was another guy. I can't remember. I think this other guy might be before Big Kev. I think it probably was, actually. So I've probably got my timings wrong. This is probably the original guy. And that is Tim Shaw from Demtel. And he got big selling knives. The cut was amazing. Chop through anything. Switch between bread to tomatoes to meat. And the ads are sensational. I had fun the other day looking through YouTube, watching some of him. They always had to have a catchphrase. And Tim Shaw's was, "But there's more." Now, viewers, I'm already offering you these knives for just $49.95, but I know you want more. So we're going to give you these steak knives, normally valued at $39.95, for just $19.95.
Such a deal.
But I know you want more. And he would go on. It was, but there's more. That became his huge catch cry. And again, Tim Shaw, Demtel, beloved across the nation. So what I'm wondering is, two questions, actually. Jason, how many questions?
Two questions.
Thank you. Martin, were you around? Is this even in your zone of knowledge? Do you have any experience of this at all? And secondly, Jason, were there American salesmen like this where a catchphrase just took over the nation and became a big thing and they were more popular than anything you could imagine? So Martin first, are you familiar?
Answering question one, Tim Shaw, I don't have any memory of him, but the whole "but there's more" catchphrase or slogan sounds very familiar. So I don't know if I ever heard his voice carried on or featuring in other kind of infomercials on TV, but I feel like I'm familiar with that kind of, let's say, capitalist broadcast vocabulary. Let's call it that, right? But Big Kev, absolutely. When I was a kid, he was on TV constantly giving thumbs up to everything. He was shinier than you could believe with those satin shirts. And he was quite grey by the time that I saw him on TV. But I remember him fondly. He would just randomly pop up on commercial television. You'd just been watching some, you know, pretty interesting drama on television, and then suddenly Big Kev's yelling at you to buy some sort of multi-purpose spray. It was pretty exciting. So I can see why he was so G'd up.
Okay. And do you have a fondness for them, or are they just like a thing that existed at a time?
Nostalgically, yes. Because when I was a kid, I don't think I knew much better, or I was growing up in that kind of environment of watching commercial TV. Like, I'd watch shows on ABC and SBS and like ABC Kids, talking like when I was really young. So I knew what commercial free television was, but it was just kind of an accepted thing. Like, I don't think kids now particularly would appreciate it so much if they're just watching a lot of YouTube or walking away from the TV with their phones or something in families nowadays. But when broadcast TV was on, like, you of course both would know this and a lot of people listening, that ads came on and then you would just kind of have to watch them or cop it or walk away or go to the toilet or get a snack or something. So to have entertaining people like that who broke up that monotony was quite fun. But nowadays I would find it obnoxious, or like, that's why, you know, we argued with Jason about the presence of the mute button on that new Siri remote, or newer Siri remote. If you do have to watch something in a stream where, you know, you can't stop it, or you don't want to stop it, you want to mute it. So I hate it. Yep.
Sorry, Hemispheric Views listeners. That was your first answer you heard there from Martin Feld. It was a great answer, wasn't it? But I know you want more. So let's flap it over to Jason over in the United States and see what he's got to say. Jason, what do you think?
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you for that question. I had to wait for the satellite feed to kick in so I could hear what you're asking for.
That was pretty fast.
I would think infomercials were probably, I don't want to say invented here, but boy, did we have a lot of them. Like, infomercials were just such a thing. 80s, 90s, probably still, I would say to some degree, but not as much. The one you mentioned.
There are digital channels here devoted to them.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Really? Jeez. That's crazy. The knives were always knives forever have been a thing of, we had one that was, it was called the Ginsu knife, and it was the same kind of crap where it was like, you could chop a tomato, you could chop some lettuce, you could chop a house in half and it's still sharp. And it's like, really? Okay. I don't believe you, but sure. And the catchphrases were always, it was always call now. And operators are standing by. Like, there are just people just waiting for your call to get you this amazing knife today for $19.95 if you call in the next 34 minutes. There's always a time limit.
Did you already have the really unsafe practice when they were demoing knives, particularly with tomatoes, where they would hurl tomatoes into the air and chop
and just
them
chop
like
it in the air? Yeah, because that's how you make a salad. You just huck shit in the air and like slice it right through the air.
It was like Fruit Ninja.
Yeah.
The game.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like you nick your uncle's artery next to you in the kitchen, but at least the salad's good.
Like I watched the Demtel ad the other day and it's like, here's the lettuce, here's the tomato, here's the shoe, here's the meat. And you're like, whoa, hang on. Shoe?
Yeah, it's like, always some random thing. They're like, they snuck in a cinder block, and you're like, well, who's cutting a cinder block in their kitchen, first of all? But okay.
It's construction rated. Yeah, it's graded for those environments.
And there's always the important, but wait, there's more.
Mm.
Which always kind of, like, thinking back on it now, you're trying to sell me this knife that can do literally anything. It'll solve all of my problems that I've ever had. It's only $20, yet somehow that's still not good enough, and you're telling me I have to have more to make this $20 seem worth it? That seems a little sketch, but okay. The other ones that you were talking about, this, and I'm just, they're flooding into my mind. Ron Popeil, he was hawking crap left and right. There was the Ron Popeil pocket fisherman, which was like a fishing rod that like collapsed that you'd put in your pocket, I guess. So if you were, you know, out for a walk and said, oh, there's a pond, I would love to catch a fish right now, you could just pull that thing out and, you know, cast your line and grab dinner, I guess.
Did he have a catch cry?
Yeah, he, well, I don't know for that one, but he had like another like rotisserie cooker thing, I guess. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was this set it and forget it was like the big thing. It was always like you just turn this magic dial, leave for a weekend, come back, and you'd have like roast ready for Sunday dinner or something. Like, it was just magic.
The George Foreman grill, that's a big one.
That was a big one. Yep. The OxyClean guy, that was later. That was a big one.
Did you have Abduas?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, it's just one of those stupid ab machines where, you know, you fold it easily.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We had...
That was a different kind of set and forget, because you set it under there and then forget that you ever had it.
We had what's-her-name with the leg thing. She was very...
Jane Fonda.
Probably. It was like a big spring. You would like squeeze your legs together or something, and that was supposed to like fix your life, I guess. I don't know. The other one was Flowbee. That came to mind. That was the, it was like a haircut thing that attached to your vacuum. So you'd like cut your hair with it and it would suck the hair.
Suck your scalp
into
off.
Into the vacuum. That was another one. And then the last one that flooded to me was, Miss Cleo was on one of these infomercial things forever. And she was a psychic, and she was a pay-per-minute psychic, which sounds highly illegal, but okay. And she would always say, like, call me now. And I'll have to put a YouTube video and like, you can't reproduce it. But once you hear it, you just know like, oh, that's Miss Cleo. But it was it was one of those ones where they would do the whole spiel, and then there would be like the fine print that you couldn't read on a CRT TV that was, you know, that big back in the day. But you knew that there was a lot of like, we're not responsible for any of the crap that you're about to waste your money on. So yeah, big, big infomercial culture here in the 80s and 90s for sure.
I remember you mentioning the, you know, call now, operators are standing by. The sort of person that I was, I remember investing too many thinking hours as a kid into, like, how many operators do they have? And is it like a call center environment? Are they just panels of banks of phones? And then when they say call within the next 30 minutes, I was like, how do they know when the ad's been on? Like, are they just watching the TV? Or do they have like a chart that says we're going to show your ad at 12:32?
I always thought the same
thing. Seriously, I used to think about this stuff constantly.
I was like, who's watching the clock on this 30 minutes?
Yeah, and then later on, I was much older, and I was like, hang on, that's probably just all bullshit. It was like one guy, and you're just like, yeah, sure.
It's good that you were thinking about it, because there'd be adults who went, oh my God, I've got half an hour.
Yeah.
Not to mention the ad ran every 15 minutes, so it was like, it didn't really matter anyway.
I always remember these fondly as a kid, because on Good Morning Australia, which had Bert Newton, Australian listeners will know who Bert Newton was, massive TV personality, but I don't know all the ins and outs and the politics of it, but Jason, we're talking about someone who was one of the kings of Australian TV for a while. He kind of had his break with Graham Kennedy on his show, and he was like the preceding, I suppose, king of television. It was always known as the Australian king of television, but Bert Newton had all of these kind of prime time kind of comedy compere and hosting positions. And then he was kind of relegated to Channel 10 morning TV. And I think he was quite shitty about it, but he dressed up the whole thing and kind of mocked the whole process on the show. And Moira was the woman who ran all of the infomercial segments on that. And he would always do these overly swanky introductions to it, like, "And now to Moira." And he just kind of gave it this whole kind of cheesy look. And I was like, this is a guy who was mocking the whole format on the show that includes it. So big respect to him at the time. And it actually made morning TV fun. Nothing like that now.
Thinking about the call bank, did you all have like telethons where it was on TV and there'd be somebody like trying to get money for something and they'd actually have the people like with all the little phones set up behind them?
We literally, in Perth, we still have that. Oh. it's an annual tradition, really? And it raises bazillions of dollars. Like, no joke, like the biggest fundraising thing in the state, and it raises heaps for children's medical research.
And there's like eight people with phones, and they're like, there's no way there are eight people are taking all these calls that are presumably coming in.
Telethons, in my memory, are always a thing on American TV or in The Simpsons, mocking the fact that they happened in the United States. I don't recall ever seeing one in New South Wales.
I feel like that was a big thing here for a while.
Still one here in Perth. You'll find the link in the show notes. Seriously, it raises so much money.
Keeping the dream alive in WA.
We have a Telethon Kids Institute here in Perth, and that's no joke.
Listeners, if you ring in the next half hour in the following number, Jason, what's the number?
That is
555. It always starts with 555.
I was just going to give out my actual cell phone number. And then I quickly had a thought that maybe that's not the best idea. Is it? Should I give my cell phone number out on a public podcast? Is that a good idea or a bad idea?
No, that's a bad idea.
Okay. Then, don't call me. Call Andrew. It's plus 40829 and then some other numbers.
X7 point something.
B.
Yeah.
Hyphen. Did you all have the CD scam there in Australia, where there was like the membership you would join and you'd pay something per month and you'd get like X discs, and basically everybody got screwed at the end of the day on it one way or another? Did you have that as well?
I remember reading about the American scam. I know we had some here, but they never seemed quite as scammy. It wasn't like a full-on club. It was more like...
they were probably just like legit... pay for a service, get a thing.
More often it was call now and get the entire MASH DVD set, that kind of thing. It wasn't month club.
But that's the thing. That's a thing here in the Illawarra. You can ring the local station. It's like, it's not just the station. It's called the Wind Network. It's like a huge regional network. But if you ring the local office, you can get Crawford's DVDs to get your full 20 volume DVD set of the Sullivans. And people ring up and get it.
Country Practice.
It's like, wartime Australia.
Back when TV was good.
It's classic. But that's not a scam. That's actually like octogenarians ringing up to get their favorite series from decades ago on goodness knows how many.
We used to have that here. Like if you looked DVDs. At what's a show? Like maybe like the New Yankee Workshop, which was like a woodworking show in the 80s, 90s, whatever. At the end of the show, they'd always say like, "For a VHS copy of this show and instructions, please write to like whatever." And then for like $30 or something, they'd send you a VHS of what you just watched. And then like instructions or something. It was, that was like totally a thing.
Wow.
That is cool.
Brilliant. Honestly, Andrew, your printer is looking pretty normal now.
Don't know.
I guess that's a wrap.
That was great.
It's a wrap on 108. 0108.
Insert title here.
Extra zeros. Shit.
3.
Count us down.
2.
Yep, okay.
You good?
I'm good.
3, 2, 1, stop.